and welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and the second round of the French elections is just around the corner and happening on the 7th of May. So we decided to get on a real-life Frenchman in the form of Vincent Pons, who's an assistant professor of business administration at the Harvard Business School and is currently doing a case study on the rise of populism in France, to talk us through what populism actually means and how it's manifesting in his home country and how this compares to the populism we were also seeing here in the UK with Brexit. We also discuss whether there's any chance at all of the UK's upcoming snap election replicating France's result and having neither of the two main political parties taking the highest office in the country, so stay tuned to hear all about that. In the meantime, you can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
So you are doing a case study about the rise of populism in France at the moment. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. We teach case studies to our students, and we just taught it actually last week.
Okay. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. So what do you want to know more about?
What is the case study about? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a general case study about France, but the angle was the rise of populism due to the French elections. As you know, we just had the first round 10 days ago, and we're going to have the second round next Sunday. And the novelty, of course, is the fact that the two candidates that made it to the second round belong to political parties that had never acceded to the second round before. Front National had done it in 2002, but it was a surprise for many. Instead, it was expected that Macron and Marine Le Pen would accede access to the second round, which they did. And it's a major news that both the moderate left and the moderate right were eliminated from the race.
Mm.
So the case study's question was to understand why this new political landscape is emerging, and in particular, understand the factors behind the rise of Marine Le Pen's Front National.
And could you give me a bit of an overview of what you found? What are some of those factors?
So I think it's a combination of cultural and historic and economic factors. Marine Le Pen is, of course, the daughter of her father, and her father built the Front National mostly on a cultural platform, which was very much to the far right. At the time, it was an anti-Semitic platform with also a strong racist and anti-immigrant component. Marine Le Pen kept parts of this platform, the anti-immigrant part. She left other parts out, including anti-Semitism. So she tried to de-diabolize the party, but the party keeps its strong stances against immigration and in particular against Muslims, even though it's always very careful, prudent to not say that it dislikes Muslims, but radicalism among like Islamist radicalism. So that's one part of the platform, a cultural aspect, and the push to go back to the French borders, control the French borders, and control immigration. And then there's another part, which is a novelty, which is what Marine Le Pen has brought to the party. And it's a number of leftist ideas on economic issues. And that's very new. Her father was rather liberal economically. And instead, she has advocated for more state intervention and protection of the poor.
That to me sounds quite similar to what people have been saying about Trump, obviously, with him being quite culturally conservative, but then also being very much against free trade. So how can you explain that they're so similar there?
So I think, there's a nice book about globalization that studies different waves of globalization by O'Rourke and Williamson. And in particular, they study the first wave of globalization. We're currently in the second wave of globalization, which started after 1945. But there was a first wave starting in 1860 with a free trade agreement between France and the UK. After this free trade agreement, there was liberalization all over Europe of trade. And they say that for a spectator in the mid of the 1870s, it looked like the world was becoming more and more integrated. However, globalization has a tendency to plant the seeds of its own destruction. And indeed, what happened is that due to the trade liberalization, there were a number of losers from globalization. For instance, in France, farmers were losing from the competition of cheap grain coming from Ukraine or from the US. And as a result of that, they started organizing politically and pushing back politically against globalization. And so starting in the 1880s, 1890s, people moved away from these trade agreements. And of course, after 1914, there was a decrease in the level of world exchanges. So the fact that we see the populism rising in the UK, in the US, in France, in so many different countries, also in Australia, suggests that there are common causes. And clearly, the rising globalization is a natural candidate to explain these different trends. So I think the story would be that, globalization indeed creates winners and losers, and that at some point the losers organize and try to push back against this. And the theory in general would be that overall the gains of globalization are positive. This is what economists believe, and I agree with that. But that you need some redistribution towards the losers if you're to globalize and if you're to integrate economies. And this redistribution has not taken place to the scale that would be needed to compensate some of these losers from the losses of globalization.
Before we go further into this, I just want to quickly ask if you can sort of define populism for me, because if you're going solely by sort of the dictionary definition, it just sort of says that it's showing support for the concerns of ordinary people, which is obviously not the definition that it's being used as currently, I don't think. So could you tell me a bit more about how exactly populism is defined academically and politically?
Right, so the way I would define populism is a political movement, or at least a type of political speech, which pits the people and presents the people as an entity and presents the interests of the people as opposed to the interests of an elite, which seeks its own interests and works against the interests of the people, and B, a foreign threat. So if you're in a relatively poor country, the foreign threat can be rich American multinational corporations, and this is the type of populism that you see in South America. Instead, if you're in a rich country like France or the UK, the foreign threat is immigrants that try to come and take the jobs of the local people or the social benefits that they enjoy. But in there's really this combination of pitting the people, a pure homogeneous unit entity, against the elite, the local elite, and against the foreign threat.
As you just mentioned, that term of populism has obviously been applied to quite a lot of recent developments, and obviously specifically because we're the Brexit podcast, I'm quite curious how you think that the populism that's being described here in the UK with Brexit compares to what's happening in France at the moment.
So I think, as I mentioned, in France there's this cultural aspect, pushback against immigration, pushback against Islam, and an economic aspect, which is a pushback against globalization. And interestingly, if you look at the votes and the voters of Front National, the Front National is doing really well amongst the young voters. And I think the reason for that is that these young voters, aged between 18 and 24, are those that are struck the most by unemployment. They face a 25% unemployment rate. So we really see the importance of the economic aspect. And I think this economic aspect was also present in the Brexit, economic inequality between London and the rest of the country, between the finance and between and other sectors. But I would say that the cultural aspect was perhaps most important, reflected in the fact that the youth, differently than in France, were in favor of remaining in the EU, were against Brexit. So they didn't align with the Brexit in the way that young people in France are increasingly aligning with the Front National. So perhaps there's a more higher prevalence of the cultural aspect of populism in the UK. And I would say another thing is that and the Brexit was a coalition to some extent heterocyte of different ideas and different projects for the country. And instead, the Front National is a party that has a consistent platform, combines the cultural and economic aspects in a critique of Europe in a way that is perhaps more coherent than the Brexit, which again had different people campaigning for, and these people did not naturally necessarily agree. One other aspect I would say is that the critic of Europe has a different sense, I think, in the UK and in France, in the sense that France has been part of the European construction earlier than the UK. General de Gaulle prevented the UK from integrating EU for a long time. The UK only joined EU in 1973, so it's much later, obviously, than France. And France went further with the euro. The UK obviously has never participated in the eurozone. And for a long time, politicians that were not populist, both on the left and on the right in the UK, were a bit lukewarm about the European Union. It's only quite recently that both on the left and on the right, politicians campaigned in favor of remaining in the EU. So I think I'm not sure that it would be quite right to call all the Brexit voters populists. I think for some of them it was that they had a different project for the country, a project in which the country has had its independence, connections for sure with the EU, but its independence a bit like existed before 1973.
Le Pen's obviously also running on an anti-European basis. Are these the same anti-EU arguments that were being brought up during Brexit, or is there slightly different variations of it in France?
I think, yes, to some extent they are similar, except that, again, in France, France is more deeply committed to the EU, the participation in the eurozone, also implying that exiting the EU and the euro would be more costly for France than for the UK, because it would mean undoing more things, so it would perhaps be harder. And as a result of this also, even though you can have the combination in France of anti-EU sentiment and still people not necessarily wanting to exit the euro because they are afraid of the economic collapse that would ensue. But surely there are commonalities. I think both in the UK and in France, for people that are pushing back against globalization, the EU is the face of globalization. It's the face of the integration, is the face of the disappearing of national borders. And Le Pen, and I think to some extent also people who campaigned in favor of Brexit, are calling for a restoring of the national borders to protect against immigration and, bad influence of arrival of people who do not necessarily share the values of the country, but also restoring economic borders and protectionism against what is called unfair competition by other European countries.
So is there kind of an echo of, obviously a lot of what was said during Brexit had that kind of take back control element to it, of wanting to free ourselves from the shackles of EU regulations, whatever that means. But is there any of that in France at all? Or was that always more of a uniquely UK thing? Because I think that was always sort of a thing, even when the UK was still a part of the EU.
Yes. Yeah, I think clearly there's a sense that, but it was certainly more the case, I think, in the UK, the sense that a large part of the legislation of the country is determined by Brussels. There's also this sense, but I think in France there's less the sense of too heavy regulation affecting the country, because the country is less liberal than the UK, so it doesn't feel the regulation by the European Commission as much and as heavy as a burden as it's perhaps felt in the UK.
Mm. And as you mentioned earlier, neither of the main two political parties are going to have their candidates stand in the final round of the presidential elections in France. Do you see any chance whatsoever of that happening in the relatively two-party system that we have here in the UK, or do you think it's a very different situation?
I think it's easier for new political forces to appear in a system with two rounds, as we have in France. And the reason for this is that the voters always have the idea that in the first round they can vote sincerely. They can, so to say, lose their votes on a small candidate. And so this allows relatively small parties, like the Front National is very strong today, but used to be very small in the 70s, 80s, and still in the 90s. It allows for these parties to emerge and to slowly start contesting the predominance of existing parties. So I think this is perhaps harder in the UK, even though, of course, the rise of the Lib Dem shows that the political landscape can move quite a bit. And so that even with a just single round electoral system, you can have more than a two-party system. So I think this historical event does show that existing political parties can be contested. And I think what we see in France is that the rejection of traditional politics has gotten to such a point that there's now place for candidates that, like Macron, is likely going to win the election. And again, it's important to remember that most French voters did not know this guy 2 or 3 years ago. So this is really a new situation. For a long time, being the incumbent, having been prime minister or president in the past was a strength. Today, it's a weakness. Both Hollande and Sarkozy, two former presidents, wanted to run in the current campaign, and they were prevented from doing so. One, because he had a historically low approval rating. Hollande had 4% approval rating. It's quite unheard of. And Sarkozy was defeated in the primary of the Les Républicains, which is also which was quite the political event too.
So since, as you just mentioned, Macron is pitted as sort of the favorite to win, what would that mean for Brexit? How would his priorities and sort of opinions lie in that regard, do you think?
So Macron has campaigned strongly in favor of the EU and staying in the EU, intensifying the European construction. And from this point of view, I think the question for the UK is whether the UK will face, so to say, hard Brexit, in which the EU will make the UK pay for its decision, or a soft Brexit, in which the EU and the UK come to a deal that is favorable for the UK, and the UK gets to keep a number of things that it enjoyed as part of being in the EU, and can repeal others that it didn't like as much. It's of course, what makes things unclear is that it's not clear what exactly the Brexit voters were voting for. It's not really clear which of these two solutions they were voting for, and it's possible that some of the Brexit voters were actually desiring a very hard Brexit. But certainly for the country, I think a soft Brexit would be better, and a soft Brexit would entail, for instance, allowing London to remain the financial capital of Europe. But I think that Macron, I don't know what he would think about that, but I think if you're committed to the EU and if you're still part of the EU, you may be in favor of a hard Brexit. And the reason for this is that you may be tempted to use the Brexit to send a signal to other European countries that are a bit hesitant about remaining in the EU, to show them that there's a high price to pay if you decide to go out. So, I would be a bit worried, actually, that Macron, if he's consistent in his desire to reinforce the EU, may use, unfortunately, the UK to push for a hard Brexit, a hard solution, a costly agreement with the UK, which wouldn't be, of course, great for the UK, but may help reinforce the European Union.
So let's say Macron wins, which he probably will. That doesn't necessarily dissipate the huge amount of support that the Front National has sort of rallied behind itself. What happens after the election with that? What do you think?
So I think to some extent, the higher the Front National and the higher the vote share of Marine Le Pen in this election, the stronger will be Macron's negotiating power to go and talk with other European countries, including Germany, and negotiate for a new European economic, monetary and fiscal policy, which would be more favorable to the interests of France and the interests of southern European countries. And the reason for this is that the higher the Front National, the more likely it is that the Front National could win in 2022, which would be very costly for Germany, because a victory of the Front National would mean a dissolution of the European Union, and Germany and other countries certainly have benefited from being part of the Union. So again, I think the higher the Front National, the higher the threat represented by the Front National and an exit of the EU, the more the negotiating power of Macron if he's elected. So, of course, an election of Macron also means that a heavy burden would be on his shoulders, since he would have the responsibility of improving the economic situation. The high French unemployment, the sluggish growth, I think are responsible for the rise of Front National, and the best argument against the Front National in 5 years from now will be an improved economic situation. The issue is that being in the center and probably having to govern both with the left and the right means that it will be, for Macron, means that Front National will be in an even easier position to represent itself as the only true alternative when the 2022 election comes, because they can say, look, the left and the right have governed the country together, the economic situation hasn't improved, so clearly this was just a recycling of old policies with a new face. You have to choose a radically new type of policies. This is what we have been proposing, and so you have to vote for us. So the stakes are high both for next Sunday, but they are high for the next 5 years and for what Macron is able or not to achieve in the next 5 years.
Well, on that optimistic statement, I think that's about all the questions I had for you today. Thank you again so much for coming on. And that's it for today. Thank you again so much for tuning into the Brexit podcast. Feel free to subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast if you want to get more episodes like this. And in the meantime, you can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. My name is Jennifer Han, and my co-host usually is Tim Hemming. However, he's not on today. And our co-producer is Warren Paul. The theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.